Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Today we ease up a bit on the gloom and doom and look at the somewhat lighter side of cell phones. I hope you'll stay tuned.
Pennsylvania 6-5000.
Longtime listeners, if I have any, will have noted that the introductory music is not the show's regular theme song. In fact, it's been so long since I played the theme song that I forgive you for forgetting what it sounded like. For the youngins in the audience, I must explain that the clattering bell you heard was a primitive form of ringtone, used back when telephones were black and connected to a wall by a wire. And
Pennsylvania 6-5000
was a phone number. 736-5000, we'd say today. In fact, back then, you may have spoken the number into a phone instead of dialing it. Now, a dial was a primitive form of numeric keypad. Oh, never mind. The song was by the big band of Glenn Miller, and it was a big hit before even I was born. Possibly because you can dance to it, and the lyrics are fairly easy to remember. After completing two shows on cell phones, first Gloom and then Doom, I found I had some good material left over, and I came across some new stuff. And it was all more humorous and less depressing than the first two batches I served up. Hence today's show. We'll hear from grandstanding senators denouncing prepaid cell phones as tools of the devil, street gangs, drug dealers, and, of course, terrorists. We'll hear the other half of cellist Glenn Dinning's fine article, Wireless Mind, Gullible Mind. We'll hear some of social satirist Jello Biafra's thoughts from 2008 on wireless telecommunications. And we'll marvel at the annual Beloit College Mindset List, which advises professors how different students' cultural references and memories are from their own. For one, entering freshmen don't understand that tapping your left wrist with a finger is a way of asking what time is it. Few of them wear wristwatches. They consult the clock on their cell phone instead. Let's start with a crackdown on prepaid cell phones. Full disclosure, my household's one cell phone is of this sort, which enables us to own one economically that gets used only an hour or two a year. So I was once again amused by the chicanery of the senator formerly known as Charles Schumer, now rebranded as Chuck Schumer. A year ago, I apologized on air to America's hardworking, underappreciated, and I think largely honest and fair-dealing sex workers. I promised them I would never again defame the term prostitute by using it as a metaphor to describe corrupt, sleazebag, sellout politicians such as Senator Chuck. It's been hard, but I've kept my promise, more or less. Well, let's just read this AP story, which appeared in my East of the River rag on Tuesday, June 8. Its headline reads, Senators Seek Crackdown on Prepaid Cell Phones. Alarmed by the use of hard-to-track prepaid cell phones by terror suspects, New York Senator Chuck Schumer and Texas Senator John Cornyn have introduced legislation requiring consumers to produce identification before buying such phones. The bill has been praised by law enforcement and has bipartisan support, even as civil liberties groups have raised privacy concerns, and some terror experts say it won't deter bad behavior. Schumer, a Democrat, and Cornyn, a Republican, are hoping to schedule hearings on the bill through the Judiciary Committee. Schumer has urged Attorney General Eric Holder to back the measure. Prepaid phones can be a lifeline for people with limited incomes or poor credit, allowing them to purchase a device and a limited amount of calling time without committing to a costly contract. Phone companies sold $16 billion worth of prepaid cell phones last year, and the devices are hugely popular in both the U.S. and countries around the world. But since the phones can be purchased anonymously and can be thrown away after use, they've long been a favored tool of drug dealers, gang members, and even white-collar criminals looking to cover their tracks. Ken speaking here. I can't decide which is worse, the grandstanding senators or the press that, on cue, spread the BS. Do you see my point here? Those prepaid cell phones can be wiretapped, so to speak, along with every other telephone in the United States. Now, perfectly legally. But it's harder for the national security apparatus to identify the guy who's now calling Domino's Pizza and ordering a medium pepperoni and mushroom. Well, gotta close this loophole. So let's get the public worked up yet again about terrorists, drug dealers, street gangs. Incidentally, gang members have as much right to order a pizza as Senator Chuck does. $16 billion in annual sales of prepaid cell phones. What percentage of that amount, would you guess, is devoted to arranging illegal drug sales or terrorist crimes? Now, I'm no criminologist, but my seat-of-the-pants estimate, rounded to the nearest integer, would be 0%. Well, moving on. I never did develop a taste for punk rock, but one of its leading lights, Jello Biafra, is also a fine social commentator and spoken word artist. Let's hear his take on cell phones and related gadgets such as BlackBerries. Jello, it turns out, is a supporter of having a conversation on the telephone, rather than emailing, texting, or instant messaging someone, let alone making her your Facebook friend. Here are brief parts of a long monologue he delivered in 2008.
Nowadays, sad to say, more money for music and entertainment. Well, I mean, the big one is games, even bigger than sounds, but where's the main money in music these days? Ringtones. Ringtones, which even Sony BMG guy calls wallpaper and stuff. And then, you know, this worries me now that people are going to grow up young, ambitious. Boy, I don't know what I want to be and grow up. I don't want to be on stage in a band. I don't even want to be doing those stupid Link Sync videos or groveling before those snitty judges on American Idol singing the worst music ever made. No, I want to move up to the next level. I want to be a ringtone. Oh, did you talk to that person? Yeah, I talked to him. Well, what did they say? Well, I didn't talk to him. I just emailed them. That's not talking to somebody. Sending an email, not waiting for a reply, and assuming your job is done, wrong. Communication is an equation. You got to get the other half of the communication, or you have not communicated. And this... You know, sitting there day after day, didn't you get my email? Didn't you get my email? I mean, if you're that desperate, call them on the phone. And in the age of instant messaging, it's amazing how this works. You ask somebody something on the phone, they answer you instantly. And you know what you can do instantly after that is to ask them another question. And they answer it, and even ask them another question, and you've saved yourself weeks of snitty emails to get more stuff done. An ex-girlfriend of mine in L.A. said she was out at a club seeing a band a while back, and a woman came up to her, chatted her up, they hit it off really well. She tells the other woman her name, "Oh, you're my MySpace friend." And then the other woman walked away. It's like, "Oh, I just didn't want to actually talk to you or find out you were real. I just wanted your picture in my gallery of virtual friends where I feel more comfortable. And, oh, these are my special friends because they never talk back to me. I love my friend collection, my trophy room." Used to be that living in a world of imaginary friends was considered a mental illness. Text, text, texty, text, 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 text. I'm 20 yards away from you at the mall, but I'm not going to talk to you. Or worse, text, texty, text, text. "Jello, where are you? I'm waiting at the train station." I call the person back. Another one, "Zip, I'm waiting at the train station." "Well, I'm trying to call you, but your phone turned off." "Zip, I'm waiting for the train station." "Why didn't you text me? I was standing right over there." "Well, why didn't you just come up and talk to me and tell me who you were?" Dumb. I mean, the California teenagers went on the news and were outraged when the law went through that you couldn't be yapping on your phone while holding your phone to your ear while you're driving, saying, that's not going to stop me. I know my rights. If somebody texts me, I'm going to text them back right then and there, even if I'm driving through a major intersection in mom's SUV. Wham! And, you know, it's interesting, though, the language, the texting is, you know, when you get kind of tired of it after a while but won't admit it, you keep shortening words, new abbreviations and new language and all. Maybe it'll be like Chinese and Japanese and Korean characters. Who knows eventually? But some of these abbreviations, I mean, it feeds this impulse in Americans to abbreviate their brains and abbreviate the amount of time they think, too. Carbohydrates. Very few people knew or cared what that was. But as soon as it was shortened to carbs, everyone was deathly afraid of them for about 2 years. Now, short attention span America has been treated to Washington Mutual, the bank, shortening their name to WAMU to be better understood by short attention span people. The Guardian in Britain has come up with a great term for some of this. So I must ask, are you a crackberry addict? Crackberry addicts who have to have their BlackBerry right by their bed or under their pillow, even in the middle of the night, you got a text message. Oh, I better answer that right away. Oh, I better answer that right away. A crackberry addict. Some people in the psychology field are calling this ringxiety. And even I have discovered that sometimes I feel vibrations in my pocket and reach in and, oh my God, got me again, phantom phone syndrome. A recognized medical malady now.
Phantom phone syndrome. Who'd have thunk it? In our previous installment on cell phones, psychotherapist Chelis Glendinning explained the varieties of bodily harm done by the lot of the now ubiquitous wireless communications systems. We read half of our interesting article from 2008. It's called Wireless Mind, Gullible Mind. Let's hear the rest today, which I have lightly edited. First, Glendinning wittily catalogues the psychological defense mechanisms people use to enable themselves to keep denying that there's a problem and that their lives are in increasing danger from the electromagnetic radio frequency transmissions of cell phones, cell towers, Wi-Fi, WiMAX, satellite TV, and you name it. Then she offers a brief history of people fighting back and winning. Here she goes. And who is poised to slam the gates on this interloper? Not many. Somehow a population with DDT, Love Canal, the Dalcon Shield intrauterine device, asbestos, Three Mile Island, and Agent Orange under its belt is mustering up the same old psychological defenses it used not to learn from those debacles. During the 1980s anti-nuclear movement, I studied the psyche's means of blotting out concerns for weapons buildup. And I studied the challenges endured by survivors of health-threatening technologies and the public's means of dismissing their suffering. Those same methods the psyche used to numb against the arms race and deny the existence of asbestos workers and DES daughters are here again. Gullible mind. Psychoanalyst Eric Fromm observed that millions of people share the same form of mental pathology does not make those people sane. Let's consider one repression, blanking out the facts and one's feelings about the facts. As psychologist Daniel Goleman puts it, one forgets, then forgets when it's forgotten. In this case, the forgetting is aided because electromagnetic radiation is invisible. And indeed, upon hearing of links between radio frequency and disease, some people sputter, spin around in a fog and flee. Telecommunications corporations rely on repression when touting their happy talk, keep talking claims. Satellite dishes receive radiation perfectly. There's no spillover, announce public relations departments, while consumers stampede to their local satellite TV outlets with nary a hello. 2. Denial is like repression, but carries an edge of active manipulation. When we deny, we rearrange the facts to make reality more palatable. Needless to say, the industry is the number one perpetrator of this psychic defense, but the public isn't bad at it either. After 4 decades of bioradiological research, Dr. Robert O. Becker gave his wrap-up in 2000. Quote, "I have no doubt in my mind that, at the present time, the greatest polluting element in the Earth's environment is the proliferation of electromagnetic fields." Unquote. Environmental scientist Dr. Neil Cherry predicts that every human will develop not one, but many cancers. Sidebar comment, we heard Dr. Cherry speak in our previous installment about the scientific studies that prove the danger of external radio frequency transmissions. Back to the text. 3. Selective attention is a subcategory of denial, letting in some facts but not others. Like the sign maker who busted his backside making banners to fight a cell tower a half mile from his house and then installed Wi-Fi in the house. 4. With personal disconnection, we may admit a problem, but proclaim that because of this or that, it has no personal impact. I spoke with a man whose San Francisco neighborhood was one of the first Wi-Fi hotspots in the U.S. His wife had developed strange health problems while living there, which disappeared every summer when she went to Vermont. To him, though, yoga and vitamins would provide protection. 5. Rationalization is the mind's alibi. But I need my iPhone to report I'm noshing an energy bar at ticketing, buckled into seat 23A, waiting for baggage claim, hailing a cab, knocking on your front door. But here in Austin, I can't get my favorite Boston radio station. But I have to check my email every 10 minutes. But my girlfriends are on their phone 6 hours a day, and I only use mine for 4. 6. With projection, we split the content of our minds into save and delete, and throw what we deem unacceptable onto persons and objects outside ourselves. Come hell or high water, the telecommunications industry is muscling its $1 trillion way towards planetary domination. In the face of such might, vulnerability before the toxic emissions demands an outlet, lest we face our fear of confrontation. One ready target is the already fallen, the electrosensitive. Like atomic vets and Three Mile Island residents before them, they have become recipients of disdain and discrimination, called crazy, given zero support, and pushed to the margins where, often homeless, they live in their cars. Finally, 7. Resignation is the rollover play dead defense. Ah, well. Glendinning concludes, as a mental health professional, I am well aware that the psyche has the wherewithal to grip its defenses till knuckle-white death. And yet, in my lifetime, I have also witnessed miraculous and unexpected liberations of the mind. End of this section of the article. So, there you have the 7 psychological defense mechanisms we employ to let ourselves be passive in the face of attack. Repression, denial, selective attention, personal disconnection, rationalization, projection, and resignation. Which ones do you favor? I myself rely mostly on rationalization and resignation. To be fair to us citizens, I think another factor should be mentioned, sheer ignorance. If the dangers of electromagnetic radiation are not in the forefront of your mind, that's not necessarily your fault. It's not that the giant telecommunications companies and their kissing cousins, the corporate-controlled mass media, and the government they so strongly influence, have been going out of their way to bring the damage they are doing to public attention. So don't look for an expose on the Discovery Channel or in Popular Science, let alone in the New York Times, anytime soon. Glendinning's article has an appendix titled A Brief History of Resistance. I'll read a selection of these items. May 2000, pioneering a legal concept called electromagnetic trespass, a Spanish court orders Iberdrola S.A. to remove its transformer from an apartment building and pay for residents' medical bills. July 2001, in Cyprus, a peaceful demonstration against Britain's planned military communications towers turns into a riot after police open fire. protesters ransack a police station and demand the release of their prime minister, who had been doing civil disobedience atop a 160-foot tower. September 2002. Scientists meet at an international conference in Catania, Italy, and issue a declaration warning against electromagnetic exposure. October 2002. German doctors issue the Freiberger Appeal, proclaiming the relationship between microwave exposure and disease. Thousands of doctors worldwide sign on. March 2003, the Catholic Church in Italy calls for cell phone antennas to be removed from bell towers, branding them dangerous to human health and spiritually out of keeping. November 2003, in England and Ireland, citizens bulldoze down cell towers, as many as 8 each week. February 2006, Ontario University in Canada bans Wi-Fi from campus. February 2006, an International Congress of Scientists in Italy issues the Benevento Resolution, warning against exposure to electromagnetic radiation and calling for wireless-free zones. 2006, the Chamber of Doctors in Vienna, Austria issues posters for clinics and doctors' offices warning patients against cell phone use. September 2007, Germany's Environmental Ministry and Federal Office for Radiation Protection issues an unprecedented national warning to citizens. Avoid exposure to radiation emanating from Wi-Fi and WiMAX ports in cafes, schools, and public hotspots. October 2007, protesters in a Druze village in Israel rip down a mobile phone mast. Police open fire on them. They fight back, throwing stones and metal bars. February 2008. Cell phone antennas in Tudela, Spain are removed when damage to citizens' health is revealed. March 2008. The Sebastopol City Council in California breaks his contract to install citywide Wi-Fi. April 2008. The National Library of France dismantles its entire Wi-Fi system. September 2008. The Lynn Wilsonville School Board in Portland, Oregon, unplugs its cell towers and cancels leases for WiMAX. And that's the end of Cellist Glendinning's article, Wireless Mind, Gullible Mind. Quick note here, this just in, the radio broadcasting industry and the recorded music industry are now pushing for federal legislation to require that every cell phone sold in the United States have FM radio capability. They figure this will help radio better compete with online services that stream music. However, a spokesperson for the Consumer Electronics Lobby said that they are, quote, completely, inalterably opposed, unquote, to requiring an FM radio in every cell phone. Now on to Darkest Wisconsin and the Beloit College Mindset List. I'm stretching things a little, because much of that list is about things other than cell phones and kindred devices. But they do pop up frequently. I've condensed and edited and I dare say improved the thing. First I'll read the cover memo and then selections from the list proper. Here's the memo. Welcome to the Beloit College Mindset List for the entering college class of 2014. They were born when Ross Perot was warning about a giant sucking sound, and Bill Clinton was apologizing for Monica. The members of this fall's entering college class are a post-email generation for whom the digital world is routine. Each August since 1998, Beloit College has released the Beloit College Mindset List. It provides a look at the cultural touchstones that shape the lives of students entering college this fall. It was originally created as a reminder to faculty to be aware of dated references. The class of 2014 has never found Korean-made cars unusual on the interstate. 500 cable channels, of which they will watch a handful, have always been the norm. Since digital has always been their norm, most have never written in cursive. With cell phones to tell them the time, they've seen no need for a wristwatch. To them, Clint Eastwood is a great Hollywood director, not Dirty Harry Callahan. They presume Russia has never aimed nukes at the United States, and China has always posed an economic threat. They plan to enjoy college. They will be armed with iPhones and Blackberries, on which making a phone call will be only one of many, many functions they will perform. Their professors, who might think that they are hip enough, and therefore ready to teach the new generation, might remember that Kurt Cobain is now on the classic oldies station. The college class of 2014 reminds us once again that a generation comes and goes in the blink of our eyes, which are, like the rest of us, getting older and older. Okay, here's my selections from the list proper. The Beloit College Mindset List for the class of 2014. Most students entering college for the first time this fall, the class of 2014, were born in 1992. For these students, email is just too slow, and they seldom, if ever, use snail mail. Caramel macchiato and venti half-calf vanilla latte have always been street corner lingo. Living in a country where a quarter of young people under 18 have at least one immigrant parent, they aren't afraid of immigration. As far as they know, Fergie is a pop singer, not a princess. Woody Allen has always been with Sunyi Previn. Czechoslovakia has never existed. Secondhand smoke has always been an official carcinogen. Computers have never lacked a CD-ROM disk drive. There have always been HIV-positive athletes in the Olympics. Russians and Americans have always been living together in space. As far as they know, there have always been women priests in the Anglican Church. Rock bands have always played at presidential inaugural parties. Having hundreds of cable channels but nothing to watch has always been routine. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has always sat on the Supreme Court. One way or another, it's the economy, stupid, and always has been. Honda has always been a major competitor on Memorial Day at Indianapolis. With rare exception, they have never heard of Dr. Kevorkian. They never twisted the coiled handset wire aimlessly around their wrists while chatting on the phone. Unless they found one in their grandparents' closet, they have never seen a carousel of Kodachrome slides. They've never recognized that pointing to their wrists was a request for the time of day. The dominance of television news by the three networks passed while they were still in their cribs. They have never worried about a Russian missile strike on the U.S. That last one really hit home with me. When I was a child, the so-called Cold War was raging. The media and the popular culture had scared me to death that missiles and especially bombers of the Soviet Union would be flying over Norwood, PA any time now, dropping their payloads, and I was helpless to prevent the coming annihilation of my entire family. At age 6, 8, 10, every time I heard a jet plane going overhead, especially if it were flying low, I cringed. Here they are at last. I waited for the explosion. This would be bad enough for any child, but my family lived 10 miles from Philadelphia International Airport, and I think on an approach path. If you want to keep military spending high, you've got to scare the bejesus out of the citizens. Worked in 1958, works today. Thanks for listening. New World Notes comes to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. Your feedback is welcome. You'll find my email address on the show's website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. You'll get to my non-carborundum, and ciao.